This is Ted Leidy with Northern Firearms Instruction. Do you have a crazy schedule and can't seem to get to a class to qualify for your CCW, CCW renewal, or maybe learn to use that new firearm you just purchased? Consider a private class with NFI. Learn to shoot a handgun, rifle, shotgun, or even a BB gun. Classes are taught by an instructor that you choose on your dates and location. Give NFI a call at 530-999-1822 or visit us online at usgunpro.com. This is Ted Leidy, and I'll see you at the range.
At Cornerstone Community Bank, you're more than just a customer. You're our friends, neighbors, the local businesses where we shop, and the restaurants where we dine. Your success strengthens our community. Come meet our amazing teams in Redding, Red Bluff, and our newest location in Anderson, and find out why we are more than banking. Cornerstone Community Bank, member FDIC and equal housing lender.
From the historic campus of Hillsdale College in Hillsdale, Michigan, where the good, the true, and the beautiful are taught, nurtured, and honored, this is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour, bringing the activity and education of the college to listeners across the country.
The Jews made the desert bloom. They planted millions of trees, drilled wells everywhere, ultimately launched drip irrigation and just completely made the desert bloom.
This is your host, Scott Bertram. Welcome to the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour, part of the Hillsdale College Podcast Network. That was George Gilder, author of The Israel Test, How Israel's Genius Enriches and Challenges the World. We'll talk with George about that book coming up in just a little bit. First, we're joined by Dr. Stephen Smith. He is Dean of Humanities, Temple Family Chair in English Literature, and Professor of English at Hillsdale College. Dr. Smith, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me on.
We are pleased to have you today to talk about the brand new Hillsdale College online course, Paradise Lost. And you can find it at hillsdale.edu/new course, C-O-U-R-S-E, hillsdale.edu/new course. It is available now as we speak. So you've done a few of these online courses in the past. Why this one? Why want to focus on Paradise Lost?
Great question. I've loved this poem since my college years. I remember being in O'Hare Airport in the middle of a long, long delay and reading this poem for the first time. I was blown away. I loved it immediately. And all I really wanted to do was recite the poem out loud. I was so struck by the greatness of Milton's English. So it started there. And then lo and behold, through many great teachers of Milton, to whom I owe a huge debt, and then through teaching at Hillsdale, I've really gotten to know the poem much better. It's the great English epic, Scott. With Shakespeare, Milton is perhaps our greatest poet. And if anyone's interested in what a truly great poet thinks about Genesis, about the fall of man, and especially about recovery, this is the class for you.
The new Hillsdale College online course is Paradise Lost. You can find it at hillsdale.edu/new course. We want people to get the full experience, but here today, perhaps a brief overview of both Paradise Lost and what might be discussed inside these courses. Paradise Lost, as you mentioned, is this biblical story of Genesis, the fall of man, the recovery. It begins with Milton doing a little work to humanize Satan for the reader. How does the complexity of that affect our perception of good and evil?
Well, after starting with this soaring opening, Paradise Lost plunges immediately into hell. And so the poem really starts in the dark, and the reader, in a sense, opens his or her eyes along with Satan after his fall and begins from there. The portrait of Satan is very powerful in the poem, so much so that some have concluded he is the hero of Paradise Lost, which I do believe is a profound misreading of the poem. That said, he is no less an archangel ruined, as Milton calls him. And that boy can speak, Scott. he has a remarkably potent voice and mind and a set of a leadership characteristics that are very powerful. I think that for, you know, the listeners and first-time readers, one of the best ways to approach Satan is to realize you are encountering Milton's portrait of the fallen mind. Hmm. How does the fallen mind see? It is a sort of education in that way. We're meant to see the folly of Satan, finally, and to desire something better for ourselves.
Hmm. Adam and Eve, of course, are other major characters in Paradise Lost. How do we see their relationship evolve throughout this story?
Well, Milton begins by showing us Adam and Eve together, unfallen, in paradise. The portrait of paradise is beautiful in this poem. Business is booming in the unfallen world. Everything's growing. It's very beautiful. And Adam and Eve are happy and living in a bower of bliss together. At one point, the poet exclaims, "Hail, wedded love." And he shows us the operations of an unfallen marriage between Adam and Eve. We also see difficulties in unfallen Eden. Like, you can have a bad night of sleep in Eden. Mm-hmm. You can have a bad dream. We see them having conversations together. And then, of course, we see them falling later in the poem. But the poem does not end with the fall. It ends especially with the question, how do you recover from such a calamity?
Mm-hmm.
What is the way forward for Adam and Eve, for humanity, in the wake of the fall? And I think with the ending of the poem in mind, we see Milton's final judgment. It's hopeful, peaceful, and consoling.
Talking with Dr. Stephen Smith, he's your teacher for the new Hillsdale College online course on Paradise Lost, more at hillsdale.edu/new course. We talked about sin and redemption. What would you say is the major primary theme of Paradise Lost, and what else do you talk about during the course of these online classes?
This is an immense, rich, beautiful poem. Milton takes as his primary themes obedience and disobedience. Now, the virtue of obedience for Milton is considerably more significant than we often think. It involves a loving hearkening and a free submission of the will. And he's convinced that learning to obey lovingly, freely, is essential to human happiness. He also takes up the theme of human liberty and human freedom. Throughout the poem, in a way, we're tempted to think, what about this? What about that? Perhaps something else beside human freedom is to blame for this whole mess we find ourselves in. But Milton repeatedly returns the reader to this necessary contemplation of our own freedom, of our own liberty. No excuses, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
And then also, he has a particular interest in the virtue of patience, suffering for truth's sake, peace of soul. And as I should have mentioned earlier as well, the great opposite of Satan, the poem, is certainly the unfallen Adam and Eve, the redeemed Adam and Eve, but it's primarily Christ, and the heroism of Christ is at the heart of the poem as well.
Hillsdale.edu/new course for Paradise Lost, available now. If our listeners head there and take this course, what do you hope they take away from your classes and your lectures on Paradise Lost?
I hope in the first place they enjoy hearing our English language wielded so beautifully and so well. One of my favorite comments about Milton comes from Samuel Johnson, who wrote in his Life of Milton that if you want to learn a complete art of English poetry, if you want to know what English is capable of poetically, you can find one-stop shop, if you will, Paradise Lost. For any of us involved in the human business of leading our lives, Milton's insights into freedom and virtue and their true demands are extraordinarily helpful. And finally, think one way Milton challenges us is to take another look at those famous scriptural chapters, verses, and really at the end of Paradise Lost, leaving us with a kind of freshened view or renewed view, not only of our lives, but of Scripture itself, and how much hope and instruction one can find there.
Dr. Stephen Smith is Dean of Humanities, Temple Family Chair in English Literature, and Professor of English here at Hillsdale College. His new online course is available now, Paradise Lost, at hillsdale.edu/new course. C-O-U-R-S-E, hillsdale.edu/new course. Dr. Smith, thanks so much for joining us here on the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Thank you, Scott.
Up next, George Gilder joins us. He's author of the new book, The Israel Test. I'm Scott Bertram. This is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Turtle Bay's 5th annual Reading Garden of Lights is back for another fun-filled holiday season, open on select dates from November 22nd through January 5th. Featuring over 10 acres of outdoor illuminated gardens filled with 2 million lights, don't miss this year's new additions, including new light displays and premium ticket packages. Plus, holiday-themed food, drinks, music, glowing swings, model trains, and much more. Reading Garden of Lights is presented by Mercy Medical Center Reading. Buy tickets now at turtlebay.org.
Hi friends, RC here with this month's Cigar of the Humidor. Don Pepin Original Exclusivos Nicaraguan Puro Corojo Wrapper equals a Don Pepin Classic. Cubanesque in flavor, strength, and size, this is the stick to celebrate your latest victory. Get yours today at Tobacco and Brew, Redding, California.
Hi, it's Mark from Haven Humane Society. Are you looking to add to your family? We have puppies, kittens, small critters, and farm animals. Each year we have thousands of amazing animals looking for homes come into our lives, and we hope to have them join yours. Follow us on social media and find our links on our website at havenhumane.org. Watch our weekly content on YouTube, like our Mark's Monday mashup, when we talk about what's going on and introduce you to our team and adoptable animals. Get involved. Volunteer. Thank you for all your continued support. Together, we are moving closer to our ultimate goal of a North State with no more homeless pets.
Looking for the freshest top-shelf flower? Look no further than the Queen of Dragons in the city of Shasta Lake, where they work directly with small, local farmers to bring you the finest flower that fits your price. The Queen of Dragons has the best prices on carts, edibles, concentrates, and pre-rolls. Plus, don't miss happy hour every day from 6 p.m. until close and all day Sundays. Don't just stock up on toilet paper. The Queen of Dragons has great deals, so you can stock up on the best flower for the best prices. So what are you waiting for? Stop by Queen of Dragons at 5044 Shasta Dam Boulevard or call 530-238-5638 for details or delivery. That's 530-238-5638. And don't forget to follow Queen of Dragons on Facebook and X at the Queen Dragons for all the latest deals and updates. Support Queen of Dragons, a local business in the city of Shasta Lake, where you will find the most friendly and knowledgeable staff. Queen of Dragons at 5044 Shasta Dam Boulevard. Visit queenofdragons.com or follow us on X at the Queen Dragon.
If you're tired of artificial intelligence and dishonest news, tune in to Poke the Hornet's Nest every other Sunday at 8 a.m.
Join Nick Gardner and Doug Janke, two hosts who were educated at School of Hard Knocks. Get a layman's view of local government as well as our take on national and world events.
If you're woke, go back to bed. You won't like us. We believe there's a difference between a man and a woman, and I think you probably know what it is.
Tune in to Poke the Hornet's Nest every other Sunday, 8 a.m. here on KCNR1460.com, 96.5 FM, and 1468.
Have you been trying to make sense of local government, but 10 minutes in you already feel your blood pressure rise? Well, put down the headache medicine and get ready for a new perspective. Introducing Shasta Unmasked, taking on local issues and politics that affect you every day. Your government, public health, schools, and quality of life, unmasked and uncomplicated. With a great panel of hosts, local guests, and your calls, we can unmask the lies and shine a real light into our county. Tuesdays at 6 p.m. Pacific, right here on KCNR 96.5 and 1460 AM. Shasta Unmasked, making everything local on the level.
KCNR invites you to join us the second Friday of the month starting at 8 a.m. for the Gorman Law Hour featuring local attorney Patrick Gorman, a legal expert when it comes to injured workers, compensation claims, and employee claims. So, if you have a legal question or just wonder whether or not you have a legal issue or problem, talk to Patrick Gorman, attorney at law. during the Gorman Law Hour, starting at 8 a.m. the second Friday of the month on KCNR.
Welcome back to the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. I'm Scott Bertram. Be sure to join us on X. We're at Hillsdale Radio. Follow us for updated guest and show information. We're joined now by George Gilder. He is the author of 20 books, including Wealth and Power, the co-founder of the Discovery Institute. You can find more at GilderReport.com as well. His latest book, The Israel Test, How Israel's Genius Enriches and Challenges the World. George, thanks so much for joining us.
Great to be here.
I appreciate it.
I love Hillsdale. I've went to Harvard, but I'm a real spiritual alumnus of Hillsdale. I've spoken there dozens of times over the years.
And we appreciate all of our spiritual alumni who are out there. Congratulations on the latest release. There's so much to discuss, considering what's happened in the past year or so. You begin the Israel test early on by saying that many in the United States at least, look at Israel not with gratitude, but with a finger pointing at perhaps its flaws. Are you surprised by anything, really, that we've seen in the past year since October
2023? Not really. Democrats are socialists, so they tend to resent Jewish accomplishment, whether it's in Israel or in the United States. It's a mystery, but it's the root of anti-Semitism. It's the belief that somehow the good fortune of others comes at your own expense, that you envy the success of others rather than emulate it or you learn from it.
You write in the Israel test that Americans have a need to recognize our dependence on the genius of Jews in the U.S. and our reliance on Israel for innovation and national security. So make that case, if you would. Why should we as Americans look so fondly on our reliance on Israel? What do we rely on them for?
U.S. companies now comprise some 70% all global market cap of companies around the world. 70% is in the United States. And the bulk of that revolves today around expectations of artificial intelligence, revitalizing all our computer and communications and biotech and industries. And the heart of artificial intelligence is NVIDIA. It's America's leading chip company, and which from time to time has a market cap over $3 trillion. NVIDIA was transformed from a modest gaming company into a company that makes hyperscale supercomputer processors for data centers. All this happened after they collaborated with and later purchased an Israeli company called Mellanox. But all our chip companies have deep roots in Israel. I mean, Intel is America's leading microchip company, and 80% of all its profits for its first 10 years came from Dov Froman, non-volatile memory technology in Israel. Froman started the Haifa Design Center for Intel and wafer fabs, that's factories for chips, and Intel's leading edge factories for chips are now at Kiryat Gat in Israel. I mean, and you can go through this. Pfizer and our biotech companies and then our military companies.
And challenges the world. In the Israel test, you make the point that Jews outperform all rivals, even in the arena of anti-Semitism. Why do we not see more of a united front?
I think that Jews are independent and rebellious, and like all intellectuals, want to shock, and overwhelmingly, I think Jews do support Israel, and Jews in Israel have really learned their lesson.
George Gilder with us. His latest book, The Israel Test, How Israel's Genius Enriches and Challenges the World. There's a lot of rhetoric about occupation, forced settlements. You say in The Israel Test that Jews are not, were not occupying a nation. They were building one. How does Israel benefit that entire region?
When the latest migration of Jews came to Israel, the land we call Israel now, in the 19th century, there were only 200 to 300,000 Arabs in Israel, in the Palestine region, and their average longevity was about a little over 30 years. Tel Aviv was essentially a malarial swamp, and the Jews made the desert bloom. They planted millions of trees, drilled wells everywhere, ultimately launched drip irrigation and desalinization, and it just completely made the desert bloom, attracting millions of Arabs to migrate to take advantage of the transformation of the region. Prosperity of the Middle East is heavily dependent on Israel.
George, you say the best path to defeat Hamas and Hezbollah is an immediate speed up of American and European aid to Israel. What is needed that they don't have? What would assist Israel in its efforts?
The U.S. has collaborated with Israel in its Iron Dome, and you know, Israel was the first country to participate in the Strategic Defense Initiative, and they actually ran away with it. But the actual components of the systems, and many of the systems were built by Raytheon and other American companies as part of this compact with Israel over missile defense. The inventions and innovations actually came from Israel, but the actual building, the financing, is heavily by the United States. Our defenses are just as much dependent on Israel as Israel's defenses are dependent on us. But still, it is a mutual dependency. And for the U.S., when Israel's under direct attack after six wars and invasions and countless intifadas, and for the U.S. to get all critical and begin all sorts of special conditions on the release of military aid, I think is a disgrace.
George Gilder, the new book, The Israel Test, How Israel's Genius Enriches and Challenges the World. George, thank you so much for joining us here on the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Up next, we're joined by Dr. Pat Bart from Hillsdale's English Department as we continue our long journey through the history of the English language. I'm Scott Bertram. This is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Every day, your life is filled with choices. And when a health crisis happens, you need to be prepared to choose the best healthcare partner. That's when Shasta Regional Medical Center is there to answer the call above the rest. Ranked best in Reading and in the nation for patient safety and clinical excellence, you can be confident that when you choose Shasta, you are choosing superior care, safety, and excellence for you and your family. Choose Shasta at ShastaRegional.com.
Alan Gordon, Coachmaster Collision. She had minor damage to her rear bumper. I wrote her an estimate. Later, I received a call. The lady responsible for the damage wanted to pay for the repairs out of pocket. Her insurance agent told her a claim would raise her rates for years. With our experience in the claim process, I explained to her most insurance companies would forgive a claim if the cost was below a minimum amount. I suggested she contact her insurance agent and have them review her policy. She called back very excited. It appeared her policy did extend forgiveness. They would pay for the repairs, and she wouldn't be charged with a claim or have to pay a deductible. The accident would not cost her a thing. She was very pleased. Good thing the vehicle owner came to the right place for repairs. We all pay a lot for insurance. Choosing Coachmaster will ensure you get the most for your money. Let this experience work for you. And yes, if we can't fix it, no one can.
Learn more online at CoachmasterAutobody.com.
Smoke and sap, dirt and grime, leaves and pollen, and even bugs. Just a few things that can possibly damage your vehicle's paint over time, causing it to pit, fade, and oxidize, basically ruining your paint job. Quick and Clean Car Wash can help. Quick and Clean Car Wash at the corner of Market and Eureka Way in downtown Reading invites you to stop by and enjoy their all-cloth car wash, where they take the time to pre-wash and hand-scrub your car or truck. Quick and Clean Car Wash also offers car wash packages. Quick and Clean Car Wash at the corner of Market and Eureka Way in downtown Reading.
Ready to turn your dreams into reality? At Simpson University, we offer a private Christian education that enriches your academic journey with faith and purpose. Whether you're pursuing your undergraduate degree, completing your degree, or advancing through graduate studies, our dynamic programs, personalized mentorship, and vibrant community are here to support you. Discover how Simpson University can help you achieve your goals and grow spiritually. Visit simpsonu.edu today to learn more. Simpson University, where your potential is limitless.
Invest in your future with a degree or certificate from Shasta College. Get job ready or transfer eligible in programs like nursing, forestry, teaching, accounting, physical therapy assistant, computer information systems, and many others. Classes are free for full-time students with flexible hours and compressed 8-week options. Perfect for working adults. Ask about the many financial aid options available to help you turn your calling into a career. Spring semester begins January 13th. Enroll at ShastaCollege.edu.
Now is a great time to prepare for the upcoming wildfire season. REU and city staff are busy clearing vegetation to mitigate wildfire risk to our power lines, facilities, and the community. You can also prepare by trimming back shrubs and tree branches that are closer than 5 feet from your home. Clear debris from your roof and gutter and clear dead vegetation on your property. For information about tree trimming and proximity to power lines, call 530-224-4356. Please remember, we all need to work together to prevent wildfires in our community.
Join Tokens Radio Show every Sunday at 2 p.m. on 96.5 FM and AM 1460 as host Christy Matthews and Linda Kent explore the exciting world of cryptocurrency and blockchain technology. Learn how Bitcoin is revolutionizing finance and grasp sound money principles. Hear new perspectives on achieving financial freedom beyond broken institutions. The future of money is here. Empower yourself with knowledge. Listen to Tokens Radio Show with Linda and Christy this Sunday at 2 p.m. on KCNR. Big and exciting changes are underway.
Welcome back to the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. I'm Scott Bertram. We're joined once again by Dr. Pat Bart from Hillsdale's English Department. We are taking a journey through the history of the English language. This is part 3 of 5. You can look back at previous episodes to find parts 1 and 2 at podcast.hillsdale.edu or wherever you find your audio. We continue this conversation today. Dr. Bart, so where do we see the connection between language and ethnicity and lineage?
There is so much twitchiness about this. Okay, so the heat just went up in the room here. Okay. as we said, all human beings appear to have basic linguistic faculties sort of just coded into their brains from birth, and that the whole human person, no matter who you are, no matter who you're born to, if you're human, you have this faculty, right? But there is also no necessary tie between your DNA and any given language, okay? So if you and I were brought up in an area where everybody speaks Hindi, and maybe we heard English every now and then on TV or something, but we didn't. As kids, we would narrow our phonemes to those that are in Hindi currently,
mm-hmm.
And our vocabulary would then take off in the Hindi language, and our DNA would be whatever, wherever our ancestors came from. And so those two things would not be the same. So, okay, I would say so far so obvious, mm-hmm. Who would think otherwise, right? Although there's actually a kind of mystical cult in Russia right now. It's kind of a little bit creepy. It links Russia and the Russians and their language to like this Indo-European homeland. That part of it, they're not necessarily totally wrong about the homeland. There are some theories that say it was partly in Ukraine, partly in Russia. Maybe that might be where the Indo-European languages first radiated out from. But they claim because like they live in this homeland that the Russian culture and the Russian language is like it's more pure and they're the heirs and creators of an authentic Indo-European tradition and civilization and like. No. Okay, that's not really, you know. So we posit that there was a prehistoric homeland in which Indo-European or Proto-Indo-European was spoken because the attested surviving Indo-European languages survive in a pattern in the early days, say a pattern of dispersal across the earth, in which they appear to have radiated out from somewhere between, say, what is now Turkey, called Anatolia, right? That's a disfavored theory, actually, but still, I'll mention it. And then that area north of the Caspian Sea that includes some of Russia, some of Ukraine and other countries. So also, we theorize this because the people who spoke that now dead language, Proto-Indo-European, they must have had somewhere to live, mm-hmm. right? And they must have lived closely together at first, right? I mean, it only makes sense. That's how they spoke the same language, after which they migrated outwards from some kind of central point. So under various theories on that migration, they did so either gradually as peaceful farmers or rapidly and violently as mounted horsemen warriors, or in order to trade, particularly trade in narcotics. I'm not kidding you. That's a theory.
I mentioned it earlier. Hey, drug users always help us out with language.
I mean, you know, it's just whatever. You got to have your marijuana in there somehow, you know.
Talking with Dr. Pat Bart about the history of the English language. Dr. Bart, what do historians speculate about the development of language?
Okay, so all of this, of course, is as murky as prehistory always gets, right? I mean, it's not completely without merit to try to reason back, given the little surviving evidence that we have. But we have to remember, it's very little surviving evidence, right? Except the languages themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And then the geographic positions of the people who ended up speaking these languages, which are related, right? So the respectability of it extends to, look, you can talk about vocabulary, shared vocabulary. There are related terms for horses, wagons, parts of wagons, wheels, sheep, and wool. It's remarkable. I mean, it makes your jaw drop. It's like, wow. And across all the way from Iceland to the Ganges, there are these words. Well, like, come on, that's not coincidence. You don't wake up as a kid born in England in, you know, 500 AD, and you don't wake up speaking Chinese, right? No, you're going to speak a Germanic dialect. Why? Because the people you're related to moved there and were speaking it, and you see, so I think people get a little crazy trying to resist these kind of strange mysticisms that mm-hmm. make them feel like the Nazis are coming back or something. They kind of go overboard, right, in trying to resist that. So although there's absolutely no necessary relationship between DNA and language whatsoever, there isn't any necessary relationship. In terms of how things probably played out on the ground in prehistory, there was probably at least some relationship between the two, right? As a practical matter of fact.
A lot of background. Here's the split, though, right? How does English now become a distinct language?
I know. Like, where does English... English just comes zooming out of the corner about 1,600 years ago. Well, Dr. Bart, how did that happen? You know, did the space aliens bring it? No, of course not. All right. So during all these splits away from Indo-European, as people migrated, right... one of them was a group of people who spoke kind of a Germanic flavor of that original language. They had, you know, twisted and turned the language enough that it had become what we call Germanic. There are some interweavings, by the way, of the Slavic and Germanic branches. Well, you know what? They're geographically contiguous. Mm-hmm. So, wow, what a surprise, right? But for perspective on English, the Hittites, and you might remember Uriah the Hittite in the Bible, right? They made their way from whatever the Indo-European homeland might have been into Anatolia, which is now Turkey, right? Sometime, conservatively speaking, sometime before 2000 B.C., okay, possibly as far back as 4000 BC. Again, this is prehistory, so you're making a lot of educated guesses, right? As a distinct written language, Hittite is likely more than twice as old as English is as a distinct written language, though English has the potential to catch up, of course, because it isn't dead yet, right? So, whereas Hittite kind of conked out there.
Yes.
So,
Dr. Pat Bart with us talking about the history of the English language. At this point, Dr. Bart, you have peoples from northwest Germany, from southern Denmark, now coming over to England. So what's the effect of this?
DNA suggests that more men came over from the continent than women did, at least at the start. That those men intermarried with Celtic women, who were themselves, by the way, descendants of Celtic men who had done just the same thing, okay, to the sort of Neolithic people who built Stonehenge. Those are not Celtic descendants. They're not, obviously, they're not Germanic descendants mm-hmm. either. They're from a completely separate wave of immigration. People such as the Basques, between Spain and France, lived up in the mountains. Their language is not related to Indo-European at all. So they are pretty clearly related to those people who kind of got swamped by the Celts and the Germans, right? You know, so English at that time of these in-migrations into England was kind of this crazy quilt of dialects spoken by Angles, Saxons, Jutes, and Frisians. And it established itself in the middle of the island within about 150 years in what is now England. Scandinavians, a.k.a. the Vikings, right, began to invade relentlessly for about 300 years, from the 8th to 11th century. At times they raided, at times they stayed put as full-on invaders, but they tended to live separately, we're learning, actually, unless in really big cities like York, of course, there was a lot of mixing. But mm-hmm. but they would also found little hamlets of their own. Eventually, they actually took over the whole island. But a Saxon king, Alfred the Great, fought them back into possession of only half the island. And then his descendants took over the island briefly again.
We'll pause there and continue this conversation on the history of the English language with Dr. Pat Park from Hillsdale's English Department. I'm Scott Bertram. This is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Join Shasta College Saturday and Sunday, December 7th and 8th from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. at the Shasta College Farm for their annual country Christmas fair and tree sale. They have a wide variety of trees to choose from. And come and get your Christmas shopping done early with handcrafted gifts. Plus, proceeds will benefit Shasta College students. In addition to shopping, you can enjoy the free family fun activities with a bounce house for the kids and a petting zoo, too. It's all happening at the Shasta College Farm. Bring 6 non-perishable canned food items and receive $3 off one tree. Canned food will be donated to the Good News Rescue Mission.
This Hawaiian mini vacation is brought to your radio by Maui Bob's Office Cleaning. So, what does professional office cleaning have to do with relaxing in a tropical paradise? Frankly, nothing. But Maui Bob and the crew want to remind you to be sure to take the time for what's important in this workaday world. Family, friends, and yes, even yourself. And if their professional office cleaning services can help you make that time, give them a call at 221-5868. This Hawaiian mini vacation was brought to your radio by Maui Bob's Office Cleaning, 221-5868.
Join Aaron Ryan and Bill Cundiff for We the People Radio every Sunday from noon until 2. Our expert guests will give you the whole story rather than a bunch of sound bites. Our commercial-free archives are always available at wethepeopleradio.us.
Sponsored in part by Pape Machinery, located at 3119 Twinview Boulevard, for all your local John Deere ag and turf products. Join us every Sunday from noon until 2, wethepeopleradio.us.
What shall we do about them?
KCNR 96.5 FM, AM 1460, and KCNR1460.com has teamed up with Michelle Slade from My Umbrella Marketing, the Turtle Bay Exploration Park, and Black Bear Diner at 2605 Hilltop Drive to help out Toys for Tots this holiday season and give you a chance to win some great prizes, including 4 tickets to the Turtle Bay Garden of Lights and $50 in gift certificates, better known as Black Bear Bucks from Black Bear Diner. All you have to do to get into our drawing is donate a brand new unwrapped toy valued at $10 or more to the KCNR studios at 1326 Market Street in downtown Reading. Then your name goes into a drawing coming up December 12th at 8:15 a.m. with Carl and Linda Bott during Free Fire Radio on KCNR. Teaming up with Michelle Slade from My Umbrella Marketing, the Turtle Bay Garden of Lights, and Black Bear Diner to help out Toys for Tots this Christmas. And giving you a chance to win some great prizes on KCNR. No purchase necessary to enter the drawing. 1 entry per person.
We're back on the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. I'm Scott Bertram. We're in the middle of our conversation with Dr. Pat Bart from Hillsdale's English Department about the history of the English language. Dr. Bart.
Since the Viking languages, which were several, right, dialects, were mutually intelligible with English, if you tried hard enough, this likely hastened the weakening of the case system in English. You know, if you study German or Latin, right, and you hate that case system, right? Yeah, because you're not used to it.
Yes.
You know, your adult brain has not been conditioned to use cases to indicate various functions in a sentence, right?
Mm-hmm.
You want the position of the word to indicate that, extra verboseness to indicate such relationships. So, you know, I always say, like, when your Aunt Inga, who's a Scandinavian, uses one case ending, and your Aunt Hilda, who's an Englishwoman, uses another one, you start to kind of, like, fluff your endings, you know, like, because you don't want them, like, mad at you, you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And so this is thought to be, actually, the Celtic language of the people, the conquered people of the earlier stage, did not appear to mix anywhere near as much with English, probably because they were just mutually unintelligible. There was not mutual intelligibility. You have to actually learn the whole vocabulary. But, oh, I know what she's saying now.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, who knew? But with these Scandinavians, you know, you could kind of bargain your way through a sentence and kind of figure it out. And so this is why it had more influence on English, because you could actually sort of communicate and pick up the other language, because it was really a heavy accent instead. And so in this way, English, even in the Old English period, was wrenching itself away from, like, modern German. Now it still has a huge case system, right?
Mm-hmm.
And yet English is descended from German. Like, how did that happen? And usually people blame French for this, because it makes English resemble French more, grammatically speaking. And yet it's not French's fault, most likely.
Talking with Dr. Pat Bart about the history of the English language. Everything changes in 1066 with the Battle of Hastings. So what's the fallout for language?
Okay, so as said, everything didn't change, but it speeded it up, certainly. It speeded up the uptake, the influence of the Mediterranean in all aspects, social and literary. It speeded up the uptake of Latin, because, of course, if you're a French speaker, you just natively understand Latin better than an Anglo-Saxon, even if he's pretty learned.
Mm-hmm.
If he's not really learned and doesn't really know Latin, it's more foreign to him than it is to you, right? And, of course, Romance influences. So English suddenly, although it was taking in words from Latin and concepts from Latin and translating them into English quite frequently, now it starts to take in, I mean, tens of thousands of words from French. And, of course, it's Anglo-Norman. It's Norman French with an Anglo or insular twang to it,
mm-hmm.
right? So English almost ceased to be a literary language for well over 200 years. I mean, almost, really kind of almost 300 years. It didn't completely cease. You had certain works, but they're not works that we teach typically, and I don't feel wrong about not teaching them, unless in an advanced course, right?
Mm-hmm.
In Arthurian, so that's a seminar, I teach about Lamon's Brut, which is an English translation of a French translation of a Latin translation of the Welsh stories about King Arthur. Yeah, wow, that's a lot of translating, right? But, you know, I a snippet, because mm-hmm. I want them to kind of get that feel for, like, wow, King Arthur exists in all these weird circumstances, yeah. Right? So, but English is really very much suppressed. It's estimated that about half of the English nobility were outright killed at the Battle of Hastings.
Hmm.
So the whole aristocracy is gone.
Mm-hmm.
So that culture that produced Beowulf literally in one single day comes to an end. So in that sense, everything changes.
Yeah.
Okay. Case system was already well underway during the Old English period.
How does English then become a literary language and a language of learning?
Okay. We think of maybe, oh, well, I guess English became a literary language with Geoffrey Chaucer, right? But actually, in the Anglo-Saxon period, first through translations from famous Latin works such as Boethius's Consolation of Philosophy, King Alfred the Great translates that amongst others, with help from his friends, but many Latin works are translated into English, and so then English, of course, it's kind of a derivative literary quality, but
mm-hmm.
it's showing itself as like, no, see, you can express these things in English. You don't have to leave them in Latin. And so then, of course, later, the oral culture gets written down, and it is beautifully, amazingly, highly developed. I know that some people have a certain contempt for Beowulf. They find it strange and crude, and you know, but actually, I've taught Beowulf. I've been here 15 years. I've taught it every year, so that's 15 times.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, I definitely studied it maybe five more times before I came here, and so that many times, and it's inexhaustible, right? So it was, you know, when you start writing things like that down, that's a full on literary culture, right? It's productive. So the Bible translations as well.
Mm-hmm.
And then a certain intellectual probing of the scriptures in, we have surviving sermons, right, collections of sermons, where the language is beginning to work itself more into the theoretical realm, right, of theology and philosophy. So it was well on its way, and it was on its way there way before French, way before German, way before Italian. Because remember, you know, I mean, if Dante in the 14th century, or if the Dominicans before him, in the couple of generations before him, if they're the ones who start developing Italian as a literary language, then that's several hundred years after the crude, rude Anglo-Saxons were actually developing English as a literary language. So we do hold our heads up there a little bit, more than we tend to.
So where does the influence of those Romance languages like French and Latin enter the picture?
Okay, so as said, the Mediterranean, the Latin language, they start to come in, in the 590s, Gregory the Great sends evangelists, they start to Christianize the English, and by the time of Bede, so like, you know, in the 590s, and then Bede is in like early 700s, 730s, he's writing a Latin history of the English church and people, drawing on the interlibrary loan system of the Benedictines. Okay, I mean, he's like the biggest egghead ever, okay, right? And so he's participating in that Latin culture at a very high level. It's been argued that you know, he's the first since the ancient Greeks to write real history. I don't know if that's a valid claim, but he's certainly writing real history. He's
mm-hmm.
writing documentary history as best he can with the elements that he has available to him up in the north of England, up in sort of like nowhere, the middle of nowhere. He's writing at this high level in Latin, right? So there's an influence there. People translate that into English so that more people can read it and understand it, right? So those ideas filter into English that way quite often. Usually at that time, they try to either invent an English word or find an English word that was parallel to a Latin word, rather than, of course, our habit now is just grab any foreign word you can. Like, sure. That one's good. Yeah, we'll use that word now. Okay, why bother to invent one from English, you know, when we can have that one instead from some other language? So it asserted a lot of influence. The word weird is often translated, I think, quite sloppily as fate, which, of course, comes from Latin, right, and has an implication that it is known from before all time that this thing is about to happen.
Mm-hmm.
That's the concept behind the word fate, right? But weird comes from a Germanic root that, in modern German, werden means to become, something that is coming into being. And weird is that same word. Of course, we use it in a different way now, meaning kind of like uncanny or strange,
right,
or incalculable, right? You know, but so there's a long period of kind of back and forth between these Mediterranean ideas where now we're so Mediterraneanized that we just, oh, it's fate, come on, it's just fate, don't be so persnickety, you know, right? And I think for them, they realize that, no, this is kind of different, what they say,
mm-hmm,
right?
That will wrap up this edition of the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. Our thanks to Dr. Stephen Smith, your teacher for the new Hillsdale online course, Paradise Lost. Also, George Gilder, his new book, The Israel Test, and Dr. Pat Fart. Remember, you can hear new episodes every week on this station. You also can find extended versions of some of our interviews or listen anytime to the podcast. Find it at podcasts.hillsdale.edu or wherever you get your audio. Until next week, I'm Scott Bertram, and this has been the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Turtle Bay's 5th annual Redding Garden of Lights is back for another fun-filled holiday season, open on select dates from November 22nd through January 5th. Featuring over 10 acres of outdoor illuminated gardens filled with 2 million lights, don't miss this year's new additions, including new light displays and premium ticket packages. Plus, holiday-themed food, drinks, music, glowing swings, model trains, and much more. Redding Garden of Lights is presented by Mercy Medical Center Redding. Buy tickets now at turtlebay.org.
Every day, your life is filled with choices. And when a health crisis happens, you need to be prepared to choose the best healthcare partner. That's when Shasta Regional Medical Center is there to answer the call above the rest. Ranked best in Reading and in the nation for patient safety and clinical excellence, you can be confident that when you choose Shasta, you are choosing superior care, safety, and excellence for you and your family. Choose Shasta at ShastaRegional.com.
I'm Shannon Phillips with the McConnell Foundation. Happy holidays. During this time, it's important to salute our military personnel, domestically and abroad, who work to keep our country safe. It's during the holidays, that warm, happy feeling of being together with family, that we sometimes take for granted how much we have to be thankful for. So we want to make sure that we let the families and those who serve know that we appreciate their service above self during the holidays.
Every day, your life is filled with choices. And when a health crisis happens, you need to be prepared to choose the best healthcare partner. That's when Shasta Regional Medical Center is there to answer the call above the rest. Ranked best in Reading and in the nation for patient safety and clinical excellence, you can be confident that when you choose Shasta, you are choosing superior care, safety, and excellence for you and your family. Choose Shasta at ShastaRegional.com.
Hi, this is Chuck Kenney, owner of Shasta Gas Propane. 27 years ago, my wife Judy and I started Shasta Gas with the help and under the direction of the Lord Jesus Christ. In fact, we believe He is the owner and we are simply the managers. Through the years, we have received many offers from major national corporations to buy Shasta Gas. But our commitment has always been to be and remain locally owned and family operated. Our daughter Karen Wehunt and her husband Jason now manage the daily operations of Shasta Gas and Shasta Shasta Tanks, a new business we started a few years ago. We now have the third generation of family members working in the business. Sunshine Stevens, our granddaughter, and her husband Adam, and our grandson Jason. Our commitment and motto are still the same. Our customers are warm friends. To support locally owned family operated business, please call Shasta Gas Propane at 530-365-3793. That's 530-365-3793.
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.